And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, I understand that you went to a rally in Scranton of the Democratic Party whose purpose was to whip up enthusiasm to register voters to make sure Pennsylvania stays a Democratic state. And you discovered a very weird circumstance, right?
Yes, yes. Who was there and who wasn't there? This was run by the state and in conjunction with the labor unions. And
The state Democratic Party.
State Democratic Party, yeah. And so the moderator was a state senator from Philadelphia, Shaq Street, whose father, John Street, was formerly mayor of Philadelphia and happened to be my classmate at Temple Law School many moons ago. But the locals, Bob Kane and Matt Cartwright, were the feature headliners. They were the ones that appeared in the message that we got. And then also we had state reps of Marty Flynn and Bridget Kozorowski were there. Mayor Paige Cognetti was there, which is really interesting because, of course, she broke with the party and became an independent to win her mayoral race, although she indicated that soon she will be changing her registration back to Democrat.
So far you've named a bunch of people, most of whom are in their 40s.
Well, Paige is just under 40. Matt Cartwright is a little, and Bob Casey are a little bit older. Kyle Mullins was there as well, another state rep. And then there were a couple of union people there. The head of the SEIU was there. Rosemary Boland from the teachers union was there. And curiously, we had two Luzerne Countyans. We had the head of Luzerne County Democratic Party, Kathy Baczynski, and state rep Eddie Paschinski came up. Now, that's fine. I mean, you know, shows some solidarity. But curiously, there were some missing faces. The Lackawanna County chairman, Chris Patrick, wasn't there. I didn't see a city chairman there. There was the county commissioners, the Lackawanna County commissioners, there were the Democratic majority, Jerry Notariani and Debbie Dominick. They weren't there. And none of the row offices, all of which are held by Democrats in the county, were there. We didn't see Evie McNulty. We didn't see Ed Karpinski. We didn't see Fran, try to think of her last name, the Register of Wills, the Clerk of Judicial Records. They weren't there either. So it was kind of curious as to who and who wasn't there. I didn't see anybody from the Carpenters Union, who are usually around these rallies. After all, this was in the IBEW building. But the audience had about 50 people, and there were some younger faces in the audience. And, the whole purpose of the rally was to say we want to register as many new voters as we can. And we want, to then follow up and get them out to vote.
So this is interesting. In other words, you had a number of office holders who were there. But the people who voluntarily undertook the responsibility for organizing the party, they didn't come. That's fascinating. Well, you know, it's a similar thing in Susquehanna County. Years ago, when Obama first ran, I remember going by the Democratic Party booth at the local fair. And they had signs up for all the local candidates, but no signs up for Obama. And so I asked the chairman of the party, who happened to be sitting there, where are the Obama signs? And he said to me, oh, that's not our party. That's the national party. We're the Susquehanna party. So that's interesting. If all of the Democratic organizations throughout the state of Pennsylvania have the attitude that they're just local patronage groups, like the Susquehanna Party seemed to have at that time. There's no hope that there's going to be a Democratic Party effort in Pennsylvania in this election. The only effort will be mounted by whichever candidate is able to organize a statewide campaign. The party's not going to help them. And so far as I can see, none of these candidates except Sanders has the ability to do that kind of organizing. So that's what I make of all of this. What do you make of it?
I just make of it the fact that, particularly in Lackawanna County, that there is no real party organization. I mean, I can understand Susquehanna County, when Obama was running, not wanting to showcase a Barack Obama. I mean, let's face it, the race car was a big factor up there. And they were just as eager to separate themselves as the Republicans were on that. Lackawanna County has not had a great political organization for a number of years, and it's pretty sad. I had talked to Kathy Buzinski previously when I was circulating my petitions to run for alternate delegate, and she's pretty cognizant of the fact that in Luzerne County, and the same is true for Lackawanna County, that the Democrats have been losing voters to the Republicans over the last several cycles, and she wants to, if not reverse the trend, at least stop the bleeding. Now, also we have to consider this year that unlike in 2016, there's no statewide race for Senate. There's only some statewide office races going on, notably for Attorney General and Auditor General and State Treasurer. But nobody from those offices was there either. I think you're right. I think Bernie Sanders has the best national organization in terms of trying to register voters and get people out. But the state has to do a more, comprehensive job, the state party, of pulling all these diverse candidates together.
But who is the state party? Isn't the state party a kind of a federation of all these groups, some of whom, as you point out, are non-functional?
Well, it is.
I mean, there's not even a group in Lackawanna County. What group is there?
Right. People. Well, I think that's one reason that they were there with the unions, you know, trying to piggyback on the unions' organizational levels. But we have to remember that the unions are divided. The leadership no longer holds as much sway with the general membership as they once did. I mean, if you look at what happened in the Nevada caucuses, there was a split with the leadership, and we've seen this before in other elections where the particularly among the trades, where the rank and file are more conservative and are Trumpian rather than the leadership.
Well, the leadership of the building trades unions are hardly radical people. They never were. They were always very conservative, politically very conservative.
Right.
And not only politically very conservative, they don't even organize in their own trades. I mean, they've lost representation across the board because they just won't organize. Their attitude is they will protect the jobs of the current members. End of story. If you're a relative, you can get in the union. Otherwise, don't come around. And therefore, they don't bother to organize workers in a variety of places where they work, but which is too much trouble to organize because they may be immigrant workers or anyway, they're not relatives. So,
but the leadership does recognize the economics of the situation and the fact that the Republican Party is out to destroy the power of unions and thereby destroy their bargaining power and thereby destroy their financial wherewithal. The leaders get that. The membership,
but they don't have the ability to do anything about it because they don't want to organize. If you don't want to organize, it doesn't matter what you understand. You're not able to build your movement. If you can't sit still, you can't stand still. You have to act to bring in the people who want to work. If you don't do that, you're a dying movement. And that's what these people are presiding over, a dying movement. I was a carpenter in New York. When I was a carpenter and union member, you couldn't get a job on any construction site if you weren't a card-carrying member of the union. Right. Over years, the union gave up trying to make sure that guys who worked on small-scale residential projects were union members. So four apartment houses, six apartment houses, the kind of thing you had in the outlying districts, they didn't bother with that. They paid attention only to the commercial buildings, the office buildings, and the big apartment houses.
Yeah, the big stuff.
The big stuff. So what was the result? The result is that now, 30 years later, only 20% of the work in New York, a union town, is union. And it's only the big stuff. And all the work, basically all the work in the Brooklyn and Queens, Staten Island, the Bronx, is non-union. Most of the men in the construction trades are non-union. They have lousy wages, terrible conditions, and no benefits. Now, that's a very poor record for the leadership of the unions.
Yeah, don't forget, Donald Trump has just proposed something that would further help destroy unions when he said that on the defense contracts that he wants to do away with the prevailing...
the prevailing wage rule?
Wage requirements, yeah.
Well, more than that, he said that all collective bargaining for defense contracts was no longer going to be recognized because it was a violation of the national security. So therefore, they were renouncing collective bargaining in the defense industries. Now, I'm not sure that you can overcome that. After all, national security is why we don't have immigration. National security is why we do have tariffs and so forth and so on. And the unions haven't bucked them on those things. And now he just extends it to union recognition. So they're going to lose all of the defense industries. That's a lot of people. In Scranton, the UAW has a plant downtown on Lackawanna Avenue. The UAW contract is going to be nullified. I don't know if they realize that.
They'll realize it, but probably too late.
Well, it is late. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. These guys get away with a lot. If the unions don't fight back, if the resistance doesn't fight back all the time, you lose because these people get paid to screw things up for you, and they do it. And by the way, Trump is going to be here, right?
Trump is coming on Thursday. He's going to be holding a town hall sponsored by Fox News at the Scranton Cultural Center. And, it's curious on his timing or why he wants to come back. You know, he's been trolling the Democrats wherever there's been a caucus or a primary so far, just before those events are held, he's going to those states. He went to Nevada. He went to New Hampshire. He's been in South Carolina. And this one, I think, is that people are anticipating a Biden victory and some Biden momentum, and now he's coming to Biden's hometown to counter that Biden movement or momentum, if there is any.
Is there any anti-Trump demonstration being organized that you've heard about?
No, I've tried to find out. I know of somebody in my own family who would be more than happy to go out and demonstrate there. But, I don't think that they're looking to do an overt demonstration. From what I understand, they're looking to do sort of a counter project, which is one of these, feel good, low publicity stuff. I mean, when the president comes to town, almost nothing that you can do will put you anywhere near on the same level, unless it's a massive, massive counter demonstration, which almost certainly
that'd be a good way to organize getting out to vote and registering to vote. come and demonstrate against Trump.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, for that, you have to have a different kind of politics than the Lackawanna Democratic Party has. You have to have the politics being out there, which they obviously don't have.
They don't have. Yeah. They don't have. Now, you know, so we're just going to have we're going to have to see what it is. And Mike Bloomberg is coming to town, not personally, but his campaign is coming to town this week. I got a notification of that. They want me to attend the opening. They haven't said where it is. And I don't know where they got my name from, considering I'm running as a Biden alternate delegate.
I'll tell you how they got your name. They probably bought the list of voters and they sent out an email to every voter, registered Democratic, whose email address they could get hold of.
Oh, I guess so. They didn't get my wife didn't get the message, but I did. I might just go for curiosity's sake. But it does show, you know, talk about organization. You know, you said Bernie has an organization. I think Bloomberg is the only other one that has an organization that that can rival that.
Well, I don't know if it's an organization. You don't know that yet. What you know is that he can open an office.
Well,
an organization requires committed people. We don't know that yet. He might, well, but I can't believe that he does. He doesn't have it anywhere else. Why would he have it here?
Well, we're going to find out. We're going to see, you know, when Super Tuesday is over, just how much all of his ad spending, because he's been spending a lot of ads, particularly like in California, how much that that will have paid off. Also for Tom Steyer, we have to see how much it will pay off. I mean, they've been the big spenders so far. And, you know, Bloomberg hasn't even been on the ballot in the states that have voted to this point. So Super Tuesday is his first real test.
Well, as we're recording this, the voting is going on in South Carolina. So we don't know what the result of the South Carolina voting is. And I assume that Trump coming to Scranton is in anticipation of Biden doing well down in South Carolina.
Right.
But do you think he will do well? What do you think? Because by the time people hear this, they'll know. So this is a good test for you.
The indication is he will. I mean, he got a big boost from Representative Clyburn this week. And the debate certainly helped him this week, as chaotic as it was. He showed some fire. He showed some spark. You know, this is one of the places that Bernie has been weak and Buttigieg have been weak in terms of African-American support, although Bernie seems to be doing a little bit better on it than he has been there. By the way, it was finally announced this week that Buttigieg actually won the Iowa caucuses, for whatever that's worth.
It's impossible to know if that's true, because what you know is that they don't know how to count in Iowa.
Well, this is an indication of that the Democratic Party really has to sit back and stand up and say, look, enough of this stuff. Tradition is nice, but we've got to really have a start that represents the country. And as quaint as these things are, and as much as the people of Iowa demand that they be the first caucus in New Hampshire, the first to vote, we got to have states that really matter to a greater extent. And we'll see what the proposals are. One of them is to let Iowa and New Hampshire vote, but also have it like a super pre-vote and include South Carolina and maybe like Michigan, and have those four states vote at the same time rather than just the two states where there's everybody is pretty much as white as the snow in January or February.
Well, my guess is that the reason you have it the way it is that it's a controllable vote. It's a vote that is attuned to the political outlook of the people that control the Democratic National Committee. Even if it doesn't reflect the feeling of the electorate, but it reflects the feeling of the Democratic National Committee. So
I don't think so at all. I think if you look at all of this and the way these things have worked out, you've had all these wild cards over the years, you know, people who have not controlled.
That's the point. They're wild cards. They're not expected to perform that way. But, I mean, think about it. Why would you under any circumstances, why would you want a generally conservative population to be the first to set the tone if you're not generally conservative?
Yeah, that's true. Now, New Hampshire's becoming less and less conservative, but you go way back to when they took apart Ed Muskie, when the New Hampshire was the Manchester leader,
right.
used to run the state. That doesn't happen anymore. It's gotten to be much more purple, especially when you have those busloads of Mexicans coming across the border from Massachusetts.
From the huge Mexican enclaves in Massachusetts.
Right.
Like where?
Yeah. By the way, on Super Tuesday, you're going to see a Bernie strategy. He went to Massachusetts and he went to Minnesota this week. He was trying to knock out the two women candidates from the vote there. We'll have to see if that paid off.
Well, let's face it. Even if Klobuchar wins her state,
yeah,
there's no future for Klobuchar. If she doesn't win the state, or she wins it, not well, she's out, as far as I can see. But even if she wanted to go in a walkout, where's next? Where is she going to go? Nowhere.
Yeah.
As far as Elizabeth Warren is concerned, Bernie beats her in the very sectors of the population that she appeals to, educated women.
He
gets more votes among educated women than she does.
And that's why I've been wondering in these debates if she isn't shilling for Bernie, because she hasn't been going after him, where she has to, show a difference or cut in. She's been going after Bloomberg and some of the others, the more moderates. She isn't going to pick up votes there.
And Buttigieg, I think, is out as well. I don't think it matters what he gets. I don't see how he goes further.
Right. I think he might be the one that realizes it. It's awful hard. You get into this thing to say, I can't do it. But, after Super Tuesday, he's going to, I think, pretty well realize that he really doesn't have a real chance. And, we'll see if he becomes the first one of the next generation to fall out, or if they all continue to go on.
They can't all go on. They're not going to have the money.
Yeah. We'll find out. We'll find out on that. One other thing we touched on about the debate. I mean, it was an awful debate. It was chaotic. The moderators were horrible. And again, the topics that they didn't even touch on, or barely touched on, the climate change issue, which is really big in South Carolina, given what's been happening down in places like Charleston, where they've been hit by heavy storms and where there's regular flooding and things. They don't talk about that. They really don't talk about the assault on democracy or the assault on the justice system. These moderators, they just keep wanting to go over the same stuff and watch people squabble about health care or the crime bill over and over and over again. Somewhere you got to change the dialogue there.
Well, I think they have a problem. If they talk about what you're saying they should talk about, the climate crisis, you're giving an opening to Sanders. If you don't want to give an opening to Sanders, you can't talk about that subject. It's just that simple. I mean, Biden has nothing to say on it. Klobuchar has nothing to say on it. Bloomberg has nothing to say on it, and they don't say anything on it. Steyer does have something to say about climate crisis. But what happens is you open up the debate on the Green New Deal, which they don't want to do. So how can you raise the subject?
Well, it's not up to the candidates. It's up to the moderators. And these are
The moderators don't want to raise the subject.
Yeah.
I don't think any of the people who are in any way influenced by corporate America want to discuss the climate crisis, because there's really no way to discuss it without discussing putting a halt to unregulated industrial activity. It's just that simple, right?
It's either that or
prayer.
Well, prayer, yeah. We're going to have a lot of prayers about the health of America coming up, because we now have a genuine crisis in terms of the coronavirus. And
you think that because the Democrats are making noise about this, that there really is such a thing? You probably think the earth is round and not flat.
Yeah, you know, this is, I think, Donald Trump's worst nightmare, because it's something that he can't control and can't make go away. And it's showing the Peter principle at work, where the level of incompetence in dealing with things like this, are when you only have not the A team, not the B team, but the C team in charge of your administration. He closed down the office that dealt with pandemics. He's wanted to lower funds for the CDC and the NIH. And, you know, he seems to think, well, we'll just do a supplemental and throw money at it. And we
not even that much money. He wanted to throw very little money at it.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that he shut up Dr. Fauci. You know Dr. Fauci. He's the head of the Centers for Disease Control. He's been there for 20, 30 years.
Right.
And he is wonderful in explaining what the dangers are, what the situation is. Yeah. And he's really terrific in managing that center. He was supposed to speak on all the talk shows this coming Sunday to explain the crisis and what the government is doing about it and so forth and so on. And Pence ordered him to drop out, not to do it.
Pence is in charge of this, and everything has to go through his office. I mean, this is the guy that said smoking doesn't cause cancer.
That's right. And there was no reason to treat HIV/AIDS because there's nothing you can do about it. It's not a serious problem.
Right. Yeah. And of course, Donald Trump's big concern about this thing is that the stock market's going down.
Well, it did go down.
Oh, it went down dramatically. The biggest weekly loss since the Great Recession started. And he can't control that. He can't control the selling, you know, the programmed selling on this thing. He can't control the fact that companies are stopping their employees from flying. He can't control all of the things that the other countries are doing to stop commerce. And he's lashing out. You know, he's calling this whole thing a hoax.
The thing that he could control is making sure that there were enough test kits available in the United States to test people for coronavirus, because there aren't any test kits. Zero, zilch. In California, they had 200 test kits. How many millions and tens of millions of people live in California? They have 200 test kits.
Yeah. There aren't enough masks.
There's not enough anything.
Around.
Right.
No.
And the other thing there isn't is any atmosphere of crisis and hurry up and get this done to make sure that we get masks, test kits, or whatever. And now we see that there are cases of coronavirus recorded in Maine, in Oregon, in Washington, in California, and people are sick who had no contact with anybody who traveled to China or any other place where it had previously appeared. In other words, it's here in this country now on its own.
Yeah. Or the fact that there was a whistleblower who said that the team that they sent over to deal with the people who got off the cruise ship weren't properly protected and didn't have the right equipment.
Well, if you don't need scientists, if you don't need doctors, you
don't believe in
knowledge.
Science.
Yeah, you don't believe in it. There's a resurgence of Christian Science, prayer.
Yeah, thoughts and prayer. Thoughts and prayer. Although he does have a cure-all, that a miracle will happen, and spring is coming, the warm weather. My question to people who talk about that is, if the warm weather stops viruses, how come during the winter people in Florida and Arizona and California still get the flu?
Exactly. Anyway, next week we're going to be able to talk about Super Tuesday and South Carolina. We're done for today.
We're done for today. And
stay home. Don't mingle with others.
Yeah. And we also have an election in Israel, so we'll see what happens.
Oh, there'll probably be one after that, too.
Yeah.
Okay. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City. 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.